Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Chad from Grayscale Gorilla. In this podcast, we're going to do something a little bit different. I've been wanting to do a tech roundup for quite some time, and this is the perfect time to do it. It's the end of the year. Well, it's actually past the end of the year. CES is happening, so I figured this was a good time to sort of catch up and figure out what I really loved about 2018 in terms of gear. And I couldn't think of anybody else that I would rather have on the show with me than my good buddy, Sean Astrom. Sean is a freelancer out of Denver, fantastic guy, great freelancer, and he's a fellow tech nerd. He and I nerd out on all sorts of things, software, hardware, cameras, whatnot. So we got together and recorded this podcast for you guys to check out. It's going to be all of our favorite things of 2018, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we're excited about in 2019. So, if you're into that sort of thing, sit back and enjoy. Sean, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Chad. How you doing, man?
Good. You ready to talk about our favorite gear from 2018?
Indeed. I'm pumped about it. It was a good year.
It was. I feel like it was not a ton of like groundbreaking stuff, but a lot of like I sort of like shored up my little stuff, my stuff that just makes my life easier and a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think for me there was a few pretty epic things that happened, you know, in the computer space.
You're right. There was some pretty major stuff that we'll talk about, and then there was. For me, I think it was like a year of peripherals for me. I was trying to like nail down some stuff in my like daily workflow and just like little things, which I'll go over when I talk about a few of my items. But so yeah, let's go through. This is the first time we've done this, so we'll try to figure out how this is going to work. Maybe we'll do it again next year if people dig it. But
sure.
One of the big reasons that I wanted to do this with you is because. You know, we all have our fellow gear nerds in our lives, and those are the people that we hit up and we nerd out on what new display, mouse, software, whatever. And those are the people that we geek out on that stuff with. And Sean, you're that person for me. You're the person that when I find gear stuff, I share that with you because I feel like we're kindred gear spirits.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's kind of funny. We're on the same page with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. So. This will be a good show. I'm excited to go through these. I'm pretty excited to hear you talk about like what you've been using and what you found to be useful this year. Why don't you start? Why don't you start with one, and then we'll just sort of like go back and forth and until we finish our lists, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about what we want to see in 2019. Maybe some things that we're excited that we've seen at CES, which is happening as we record this. Definitely. Kick us off, man. What do you got? What's on your list?
So, well, I guess I might just start off with the big one for me. And that definitely has to be the Threadripper, the second iteration of the Threadripper.
It started with the Threadripper right off the bat.
Boom. Yeah, no, this chip was just so kind of revolutionary for me for several reasons. One big reason I don't think enough people talk about is the price point. Like, this thing, like I'm looking on Amazon right now, like you can get this thing for $1,700. It came out at $1,799. And yeah, a lot of folks might think that's a lot of money for a CPU. But, you know, up until they released this chip, to get anything performance-wise that was remotely close, you were looking at like Intel's server chips. And, you know,
right.
Some of those things, I think you can get a 28-core, but it, you know, the price point is like, you know, they're like $8,000 or $9,000 just for the CPU. And as freelance artists, you know, doing what we do, it's just, you know, no one's going to spend that on just the CPU. You know, if you're fortunate enough to work at a big shop, they might invest in those, you know, big server boxes. But yeah, so price point's amazing. And, you know, this thing's, you know, got 32 cores. At least there's three versions you can get. There's a 32 core. There is the 24 core, which is almost half the cost, if not exactly.
Yeah.
Half.
So, which one are you talking about? You're talking about the one that you recommended to me.
Yep.
The 2990 WX.
Yeah. So the 2990 WX is kind of their flagship. It's a 32 core, 64 thread. But yeah, it's just a beast of a processor, and you know, the cool thing was it's actually backwards compatible with like the original X399 boards that came out, you know, like over a year ago or so when they announced the original Threadripper, which was a 16-core chip, which was also, you know, pretty revolutionary, like at least in terms of price point versus, you know, performance and all
right,
that.
Right.
But yeah, so that's the one. A lot of the kind of, you know, a lot of the reviews on that chip on the web were, you know, talking about how it did lack a little performance in some areas compared to like the 24-core variant or the 12-core variant. But seems like they've kind of got that worked out recently with a little utility you can run. But as far as 3D rendering performance, it's a beast. It's
yeah, I mean, dude, when I so way back when you got yours, and we're both Arnold users, Arnold fans.
Indeed.
And when you got that thing, I was like, please just screen capture yourself doing stuff in Arnold. I just want to see how fast it is. And I remember you sent me, I forget what the model was, but you were orbiting around some model. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy crap, that's pretty remarkable. Like that feels like I was orbiting around in Redshift or something. So based on your recommendations, so a lot of people following GSG's new PC builds and all that. So Sean here is actually the guy who I entrusted with helping me choose which configuration to go for our new PC. So actually, you're the one who told me to do the Threadripper W9 or the 2990 WX, even this motherboard too. And like I've been blown away by the Threadripper's performance, especially if you overclock it just slightly. Like you were kind of walking me through that whole OC process and getting it up to like 3.8 gigahertz, 3.85, and adjusting the voltage. And I think the most I got out of my Threadripper in terms of a Cinebench score was about 6,100, 6,200. Of course, I wouldn't want to do that constantly. Like that would be like insane. But I feel like it's pretty good. I mean, that's a decent score.
It's massive.
And I wouldn't want to run that like all the time though, because that would be like insanely hot.
Right. Yeah. No, I remember when it was several years back. I think Nick had gotten the new like Mac Pro at the time, and it was a 12-core, and it had the new like Xeon 12-core chip in it. And he was, you know, just blown away by a Cinebench score of like 1700. Actually, no, I think that machine scored around like 1300 or 1400. So, you know, it's kind of insane. Like on a single computer now, you know, with one of these chips, you know, you're it's like running 7 or 8 like Mac Pros from years past. And that kind of, you know, it really has only been up until recently that we're able to get that kind of, you know, having like the power of like 8 computers on one for 3D needs more recently. Like, you know, it's unless you had like 20 grand to spend on a computer, which most people don't spend that kind of money on a computer, you know, it's crazy.
I know. It's nuts. All right, so I guess I'll go next. Let's see. What do I want to choose off this list? I'm going to start with something relatively innocuous. I'm going to talk about keyboards because I've been on a keyboard journey for about over a year now, and it's been a rough go. I was a huge fan of the Mac thin Chiclet keyboard. I just think that is probably one of the best keyboards ever designed, ever made. And when I was experimenting early in my keyboard exploration, everybody was like, oh, gotta go mechanical. I bought a Cherry MX red, I think, or maybe it was brown switches. And this thing was a beast. Like, it's too big, it's too bulky. So that's what I was like, I don't want to use this Mac keyboard because it's not mapped for Windows, and I kept hitting the wrong keys and all that sort of thing. Ditched the Cherry one. It was just too big and bulky and just like garish looking. So I ended up reviewing on our site the Astra keyboard that has the Cinema 4D hotkeys printed on each key, which was interesting. And I recommend checking out that blog post where I review that keyboard, because it's useful if you're learning Cinema 4D to be able to look down and see what you're doing and what the hotkeys are. But long term, it wasn't good because the key was a bit the keys kept like flipping off, and like I would accidentally clip my finger when I was typing, and a keycap would like go flying across the room. So that was gone. So then I was like, you know, I'm loving like the Surface line, the Microsoft Surface line has great aesthetics. And I noticed they came out with a keyboard that was like almost identical to the Mac one. It was really thin. It felt and looked exactly like the one I loved from Mac, but it was wireless. So I was like, I'll try it, you know, and I got the keyboard, and I spent a good, like, it was great. Like, dude, this keyboard is still probably one of my favorite feeling keyboards, but here's the problem with Windows and Bluetooth.
It just
freaking sucks. Like, I had the Bluetooth Bluetooth radio that was built into the motherboard, I think, of this PC, but it would constantly cut out. So, you know, you can go on Amazon and get like a little thumb drive USB transponder for Bluetooth for like $10 or something, right? So I bought one of those and I put it in, and I'm like, this is going to solve all my problems. I'm going to be totally fine. I start using it, and it's one of those things where I don't know if it was the Bluetooth or the keyboard, but every time I would start typing, there would be a delay before I would start to see the keystrokes appear on my screen.
Oh, no.
And that is like, dude, that's so annoying.
It's the worst.
It's like, it's the worst, dude. Like, I'm trying to like respond to somebody, and I'm like, clickety clack clack. And I'm like, it's not doing anything. Then all of a sudden it'll catch up, and I'd be like, this is the worst. I can't work like this. So I spent a good solid like 3 weeks researching keyboards. And I know this is a long setup, but my first item is the Hexgears X1 keyboard from Kono. And I found this thing. It was actually a Kickstarter for a while. They raised a bunch of money to make this keyboard.
Nice.
And this thing, it's a mechanical keyboard, but it's low profile. So it feels and looks a lot like the low profile Chiclet keyboard that I like from the Mac and the Surface keyboard, but it's mechanical and it's wired. It can you can use it wired, or you can use it Bluetooth. I chose to use it wired. It's got a USB-C cable, so it plugs right into my system. It's got some crazy light configurations, but it's very tastefully designed. It's all aluminum chassis.
Yeah.
It's like really rock solid build. And it's compact too. So if you look at it, we'll put links to everything that we're talking about. So the black one was, I wanted to get the black one, but it was out of stock. So I had to get the white one, which actually I don't really mind. I mean, you know me, I'm a matte black everything guy, but I didn't mind this one. And it's got this, check it out, dude. It's got like this really compact design where that still has a number pad, but it's like right next to the keys.
Yeah, no, the number pad design is dope, and the arrow keys, it's got full size arrow keys. I hate when they shrink down the arrow keys.
I agree. I was like that was a huge factor for me. It's like when I bought it, I was like, I love the compact keyboards that I've been seeing everywhere, but I don't like how they don't have a number pad, or they do weird things with these keys, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I like is, like, I've been using it with my my Wacom, and if you're using a pen with a regular size keyboard, it's going to be like sticking out. If you set your Wacom like next to your keyboard, like I do, then you end up like with your keyboard like 20 feet away from your body, like reaching way over. So this fits really nicely if you're trying to do a keyboard and a Wacom right next to each other. So it retails for $119, which is, you know, on the pricier side for a keyboard. But the Surface keyboard was more expensive, and I think the Astra keyboard was about the same. So, you know, if you value something, if you're typing on it all day, dude, like, it makes total sense.
Yeah, no, I went through something similar probably about a year ago, and I went so far as to like build my own. Like, I bought like custom keycaps and got like the switches and everything, and I was like, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. And then I built this thing and kind of came to the conclusion that you know, it was too loud. Like, it was just noisy as hell. And so it kind of led me down a path of finding this RealForce silent keyboard that I've been rocking for about a year and a half now. And this thing's amazing, but it's $285. And I think that was a splurge for sure, but I had to just try it out.
I don't feel so bad now, dude.
Yeah, I had to just try it out because everyone was like, I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like the keyboard that you have like at the banks, you know, where everything needs to be typed in exactly correct. It's kind of designed to, so you don't make mistakes on it. It's got that like classic layout, but that's the RealForce 104U Silent keyboard. But I don't think it's anything new. It's been out for a little while, but yeah, man.
I think I saw your keyboard, and it looked like a keyboard I would see someone use at like a bank. Like,
yeah,
like,
no, it's 100%.
It's I don't like those big, bulky, fat keyboards. I don't know. I'm just like,
yeah,
I guess it
takes up a lot of desk space. I kind of like make room for it, but I've gotten really used to it. It is quite nice. It's not as loud as like the gaming mechanical ones.
Oh,
but they,
man. Yeah. Those can be obnoxious.
Yeah. But yeah, man. Keyboards.
All right. X1 keyboard, $119. Highly recommend. All right. You're up. What do you got?
So I think next up for me, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Sony A7 Mark III that came out. Kind of
now that's a camera for those of you that aren't familiar.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, I'm one of those fake camera guys that like I buy all this camera gear and then it sits on my desk and I don't actually use it very much and it's ridiculous. My wife gives me a hard time about it and rightfully so. It's my obsession with camera gear over the years for someone who doesn't actually take that many pictures is kind of ridiculous. But I like to stay on top of it. And I like to see kind of what kind of cool camera tech is coming out. Because before I ever got into 3D work, you know, I did a lot of little bit of photography and a lot of video shooting and just, you know, was always into it. But so, yeah, this camera came out. Let's see here. It came out around... I think it was like middle of the year, sometime around like April. I don't know. I'd have to double check
that.
But I
think it was pretty early in the year.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, so Sony came out saying this camera was their like entry level full frame camera. But it has, you know, almost 90% of the features that the other two do, you know, and its price point is $2,000. For the body, which is high, but this thing, I mean, literally it like shoots in the dark. Like the sensor, the low light sensor on it, or the capabilities of it in low light are just insane. So
I have the A7 R2, and that's what I shot all of our EMC material textures with. A lot of stuff I shot with that camera, and I love that camera.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, ever since they did kind of the Mark II, I think there was some issues with the A7 Mark I that kind of held it back a little bit. But after the Mark II, it's just been – Sony's just been killing it with their cameras. And I know people are excited for the A7S Mark III, which there's kind of some rumors going around what's going to be happening with that thing. But yeah.
So what's your favorite feature is the low light? Ability, is there anything else that I would like, is there any reason for me to upgrade?
You know, that's a tough call. I didn't really compare the old Mark II and the Mark III in great detail. All I knew is that the price point was kind of a little bit better on the Mark III. I know the video that, you know, that they made some enhancements with the video mode. I think, you know, the 4K capability on it is insane. But yeah, for me, it was all about kind of the low light, high ISO performance. Because I was using a Micro Four Thirds camera before it. And, you know, you get those Micro Four Thirds cameras up into the higher ISO ranges. And it just looks pretty bad. You know, you can't really go above 1600. Whereas with this Sony, you can literally go up to like ISO like 128,000. And it's like clean, like it's insane.
I'm definitely gonna have to look at that.
Yeah, and for me it was kind of more like that I was looking for cameras around the time it came out, and so I was like, I didn't compare it a whole lot with the Mark II, like, so I couldn't answer that question in great detail. But you know, I think, you know, most people are just shocked at the price point and the quality of the images that were coming out of this thing. You know,
yeah, I loved mine. I bought it with two prime lenses. I got a 35mm prime and a 50mm, and it's fantastic. It's so good.
Yeah, and that's true too. Especially if you have good glass on there, like It's just another thing, like these cameras, like, you know, I think you had to drop $5,000-$6,000 on a body, like a Nikon or Canon body, to even get comparable quality before this thing came out, at least in terms of the low light capability. And even the A7S Mark II hasn't, you know, but that's a 12 megapixel camera. And I think the low light is even stronger on that guy. But yeah, it's awesome tech. So Sony's really crushing it in the camera world.
Yeah, the body's like really solid too. That was one thing that I was pretty shocked, is like the build quality of the body. It just feels like a tank. It's like solid feeling. It's I don't know what the housing, what it's made out of, but it you hold it and it feels like it's not going to break. It doesn't feel like it's predominantly made out of plastic like a lot of the other camera bodies do. It's just a tank, man.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if they're magnesium or just like super high quality plastic or not. They might be, you know, magnesium metal. But yeah, they're awesome. Sony's been killing it. I mean, they've kind of pushed, you know, I think they've kind of pushed Canon and Nikon to go mirrorless. And, you know, mm-hmm. even Panasonic has a full frame camera coming out later this year, which is a huge kind of surprise, because Panasonic and Olympus have really, they've stayed true to their Micro Four Thirds guns, but not anymore. So Panasonic is going to have a full frame camera coming out, and that should be pretty exciting too.
Very cool. All right, so I guess let's stay on the camera thing, although this is going to be way less complicated.
Yeah, no worries.
I'm going to say my Pixel 3.
Yeah.
And my Pixel 3 earbuds that it comes with. So, you know, I'm a Pixel guy. I've been that way since I left the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And I love it, man. I love the Pixel line. It's like super clean version of Android. The phones have been, you know, they're good. I'm not going to lie and say that they're like the best hardware ever. They've had their ups and downs.
Sure.
When the 3 came out, I was like excited about it until I saw the 3 XL's notch, and like, I'm not going to get into that whole thing, but that was okay because I was actually looking to get a slightly smaller sized phone anyway. Yeah. And I ended up getting the smaller, just regular Pixel 3, and really kind of falling back in love with having a smaller phone. Because I had the 2 XL before, which was sort of big and bulky and hard to fit in your pocket in summertime if you were in shorts, or just, you know, getting it anywhere was just like kind of a pain. Where the smaller one, I feel like, is a great form factor for me. And what I love about it, aside from the fact that it's, you know, clean version of Android, is this camera is freaking amazing. The camera on this phone, it just never stops blowing me away. And now with the new night shot stuff, it's like, whoa, like, is this like it? That's like scary to me, when like you can take an extremely low light photo and have it process the image to look like it was lit properly. It's insane. They're doing so much stuff on the software side. It's not like an insane camera that has like 20 lenses. It's a single lens camera, but they're doing all this amazing stuff on the software side to kind of process and figure out how to like get rid of the noise and the shake and all that stuff. I don't know. You have a Pixel 2, right? You have the 3 or?
No, I ended up getting a 3 kind of, you know, based on the camera. Like, I was reading about this camera and I was like, man, I got to check this out, being a bit of a camera geek. And you know, then of course I hit you up and was like, are you rocking the Pixel 3? And you were, and said it was sweet. So yeah, I had a, before that, gosh, this technology just moves too quick. I think I had a Samsung Note 8, I think. You know, I never used the stylus, and the camera was pretty decent on it. But again, like, it's kind of big, a little bulky. I hated the curved screen that they do, like on the sides, like, pretty useless technology, if you could even call it that, in my opinion. Right. But yeah, man, the camera on that Pixel 3, my wife's been saying, I need to get that phone, because all the pictures you take from this thing, it's like black magic. They come out like perfectly exposed. Like, the portrait mode has this beautiful like fake depth of field. It does, like, it's crazy. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it's the portrait mode is great. The low light stuff is great. The only thing that I think kind of sucks and I hope they improve on is video. Like, it's just so far behind iPhone in video.
Yeah.
That I'm just hoping they figure that out, man, because it's the one sort of lacking thing that in terms of like the camera that I'm hoping they improve on. But the other part of the phone that I really love are the little earbud headphones that it comes with.
Yeah, no, they're awesome.
Yeah, they're great because, like, I was a huge fan of the Apple earbuds because they came with the phone. They were pretty much indestructible. You would just throw them in your bag when you went somewhere or in your pocket. They'd be great in the airport, whatnot. They're not the best sounding things ever, but they just worked well and they worked with the phone. There was never anything like that for the Pixel phones until the Pixel 3. It ships with these white, sort of simple, but they're USB-C, so they fit right in there. But the features that it has with the Google Assistant is what I love about it, because you can long press the up volume button and it'll read through all of your notifications and allow you to respond to them. So
I didn't even know it did that.
Yeah, dude, it's dope. And it's got all sorts of like Google Assistant features with it. And what I found is they're perfect for working out and they're perfect for travel, because if you're in the airport and you don't want to take out your noise canceling headphones or big headphones yet, you're just like getting to the flight, whatnot. They're perfect because you can take a call, you can respond to texts all without having to take out your phone or, you know, have some bulky headphones on. So
Yeah, sure.
The Pixel 3 is definitely, it sits on my desk. I have a little desk stand, little like matte black next to my monitor, so that my phone is got the ambient display going. I can tell if I've got any texts or whatnot that I need to respond to. Yeah, it's great. It's a great phone. It's a great little companion piece to my desk setup.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that Google has been developing these, you know, their own products, because so many, you know, the other Android devices, like, 'cause I've been using Android phones kind of from the beginning, never had an iPhone. And you know, Samsung just kind of butchered Android and lays in all their ugly graphics.
Yeah, it's horrible. I had one Samsung phone, dude, and I hated it.
Yeah, it's really bad. So it's great to see them stepping up and you know, designing these products that actually, you know, show off kind of how great Android can be.
And you've never had an iPhone ever?
No, dude. I've never had an Apple product. Well, until recently. That leads me to my next topic. But I've been such a like staunch PC guy. I've always built my computers, and like I've always just kind of seen Apple as like, oh, they're just kind of overpriced computers. And then, you know, they came out with the iPhone, which is obviously a amazing device, and then, you know, the iPad and everything else. But I've never had an iPhone or anything really from them until very recently, and I'll get onto that here in a minute.
Yeah, tell me about your new purchase that's on your list, right? I assume.
Yeah, no, I did buy this thing. So I ended up, this is the next item on my list, and it's kind of a long story, but I actually kind of noticed the new iPad Pro in doing a bunch of monitor research, computer display research, and I was kind of researching like higher refresh rates on monitors and all that good stuff. And I realized this new iPad, and I think even the old last year's iPad had 120 hertz refresh rate on the screen. And, you know, essentially that's just, you know, how quick the monitor or the display is, you know, processing all the information on the screen. And I'm sure some of you out there probably, you know, hopped on an iPad or something and noticed how fluid the screen feels. And I think a lot of that is just a higher refresh rate. So that kind of got me intrigued. And I had seen a bunch of kind of YouTube videos of just, you know, like just storyboard artists or just, you know, matte painting artists, you know, like talking about this program Procreate, which is a really kind of impressive drawing app on the iPad. And like, well, not to make this story too long, I ended up getting a Microsoft Surface about 2 months ago, because I've always had this fantasy of like, having a computer that I could put Cinema 4D on, and then, like, you know, going to a coffee shop and getting some work done. And, you know, I know, you know, you can get, like, a gaming laptop that has eight core chips in it and all this stuff. And I've had these high-powered laptops before, but they end up just sitting on my desk. I don't use them that much because I always have two. And I've had two desktop, really powerful computers for quite a while now. And anytime you try and transition to a smaller device, you know, like a laptop to do any actual work on, at least for me, I'm just like, this is stupid. I'm way more productive on my real computer with my big monitors and everything else.
Yeah, it always starts off with the best intentions. Like, I'm going to, you know, be a social human being and, like, go and work in a public space.
Yeah.
And no, then exactly. But for, like, when you do 3D, like, unless you are really meticulous about mirroring your setups, you, like, you open up your laptop and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot I changed my layout and I don't use, you know, like, all the little things start to show up and you're like, oh, I didn't install that over here. I forgot to install that, you know, the latest version of Arnold or Redshift or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a challenge. And, like, yeah, just working on the smaller screen, back in the day, I remember I had this gaming laptop and I'd take it into some shops in town and I would, like, because they were on Apples, and I'd, like, insist on being on my, like, stupid Windows gaming PC, but it was just what I was comfortable with, whatever. But, like, you know, working on a smaller screen like that, over the years I've just kind of come to the conclusion that, like, doing actual work for me on a laptop is not gonna happen. So I know other people are way better at it, like, you know, they do everything, video editing and all their stuff on a laptop, which is sweet. But for me, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a Surface because it's a cool little tablet. It's got full Windows on it. I can put Cinema 4D on there knowing that, like, I'm not actually going to do anything with it, but I could open a file, you know, if a client sends me something or if I want to do a little test with X particles, like, I could do that. So I got the Surface, which is a beautiful device. You know, they're on their, like, sixth iteration now. And it's awesome. Like, Microsoft's finally kind of stepped up to Apple quality in terms of, like, their hardware and just everything else. But what's really unfortunate with Windows running in, like, a tablet mode is it's pretty awful.
Awful. It is. It's not. See, that's the problem. I couldn't agree with you more. I have a Surface Book 2, which can convert. You can detach the screen into a tablet and whatnot. Yeah. As a laptop, it's been so-so, not amazing experience. I think I'm on my third unit because of all the failures that I've had. Let me tell you how often I actually use it in tablet mode. Absolutely zero. I think once in a while I'll use it to watch a movie. Yeah. But it's not a tablet OS. It's not a tablet OS. Like, you can't run Windows on a tablet without being frustrated. I challenge you to try to type. It's like with on the screen. It's horrible. It's just it's a desktop OS that they've sort of, like, forced into a tablet OS, which is why I think iOS is killing them in the tablet space. So tell me about your iPad.
So this was kind of a shock to my family members and everything else, because I'm, like, no joke, I've been very staunch, like, you know,
no, you're that guy. You're the Apple hater.
But only because, like, you know, I always just saw Apple as, like, kind of making overpriced computers that they're beautiful. Like, the hardware is amazing. Like, I always joked with my buddy, I was like, man, if I could buy a Mac case and stuff all my PC parts in there and, like, swap out graphics cards, like, I'd do that in a second. But I was like, okay, I want to check out this iPad. So I bought the 12.9-inch, the new iPad Pro, as kind of, I returned the Surface I had, and I kind of, you know, I didn't even buy the Microsoft Surface with the keyboard, because I was like, at that point, it's becoming a laptop to me, and my whole intention was, with this particular device, was just to have something I can, you know, toy around with, do a little doodling. Like, I use a Wacom tablet on my computer every day as a mouse, as everything, and so I'm really used to that form of input. And ever since Apple introduced the Pencil, they call theirs, their little stylus, it's become on my radar a little bit more. And I was like, man, I got to check this thing out. So I got the 12.9, the new Pro, not with the LTE the cellular service, but just the Wi-Fi version. I think I got
right.
256 gigs. I don't honestly think you need more than that for a little tablet, but man, I mean, like, I'm impressed. I never thought I'd say it, but I'm like very impressed with, you know, this is really my kind of my first experience with iOS too. And, you know, but they've had so much time they have so many third-party developers like really producing some pretty awesome like iOS apps that, you know, a lot of that stuff you still can't find on Android. A lot of it's like proprietary to...
Yeah, forget it, dude. Like, Android has not made a tablet that can even come close, in my opinion, to the iPad. They've perfected it. They've perfected the tablet experience.
No, and it's, you know, I'm kind of eating my words a little bit because I'm like, you know, I'm definitely impressed with it. And when I first saw the first iPad announced, you know, back however many years ago, I remember just laughing, thinking like, this is so silly. Like, what's someone going to do with this thing? Like, but now I'm like, this, it's a beautiful device that you can, you know, read your emails, respond to your emails. Like, you know, it's media consumption. It's great. Like YouTube, Netflix, everything works right. Beautifully.
So the big controversy about the iPad Pro is that they've been shipping them bent. I don't know if you've caught any of this.
Oh, yeah.
But and they're incredibly easy to bend and break. I think Jerry Rig Everything actually broke one on his channel in a very spectacular way.
Yeah.
Did yours ship bent or is it straight?
Nope, it's very flat and perfectly straight. And I did do a little bit of research into it, and it sounds like if you get the LTE version, there's something going on with the antenna in the LTE version that after the glue cools or something, I might be messing this up, but they're claiming that that's causing a little bit of warping, and it's totally fine and it's normal.
All right, well I'm a little bit peeved at how they've been like responding and stuff, but yours is straight.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. I think they'll have to do something and be like, they're gonna have to either, you know, I don't know, fix that process with how that antenna's, but that's a huge thing, you know, that's like a Samsung Note 7 thing where they're gonna have to trash like every LTE iPad, but they're claiming fine. Like, and I would like to challenge some, you know, tech reviewer out there to maybe see if they can bend it straight. See how straight you can get it if you do get a bent right. one without
try to correct it. I would be so afraid. I would just snap it in half or something. But yeah, that's a whole other podcast to talk about their response to that bend and like, oh man, it's that's a whole other thing. But
yeah,
all right, let's move on. I've got one that I'm pretty excited about, and I think it was about maybe a month or two ago, my Bose QC, I think they were QC25s, my Bose noise canceling headphones died. Yeah. I've had them for quite a while, and they just would start cutting out, and then the ear foam started detaching from the inside, making them pretty much unusable. And then when they finally just cut out, I was like, well, it's time to upgrade. I'm gonna go wireless on my noise canceling headphones. I knew that was something I wanted to do because I got sick of being attached to the wire that's like on my computer that's sort of like far away, and it's just a pain. So I started researching noise canceling headphones, and I narrowed it down to three. There was the new Bose QC35s, I think they are. I can't remember. I think that's right. Then Sony has a pair, and then I was really intrigued by the Microsoft Surface headphones that I've been reading about. So I went to Best Buy to try them all out. Yep. And ironically, what was weird about going to the Best Buy is like they had all these noise canceling headphones out, all the ones I wanted to try, except for the Surface ones. The Surface ones were in the Microsoft store section of Best Buy.
Right.
At the back in a box. And so I walked back there. I'm like, do you have the Microsoft Surface headphones? They're like, yeah, we do. I'm like, all right, can I try them on? They're like, well, we don't have them out. I'm like, so you have like 30 different headphones back there, and the Microsoft ones are on a box on a shelf buried, and like I can't hear them.
Yeah.
Now, any rational person would have been like, well, I guess I won't buy those. I'll try the other ones and see which one I like, and I'll buy them. I bought them. I hadn't even tried them. I haven't even heard them. But they said I could take them back if I didn't like them within 30 days. And I was like, yeah, that's a good deal. I'll give them a shot. So yeah. The reason that I tried them is because a couple different reasons. So number one, I like the way they look. They have a really interesting design, really great build quality. I had heard they, you know, they sounded well and good enough. And the other big feature for me was being able to pair them to multiple devices. So I got them. I brought them home.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, I love these things, and I'm going to tell you all the things I love and then a couple things I don't like. So I love the fact that they have physical dials on the side. Like, I can turn these dials on the left side. I can adjust my noise-canceling level and, like, bring it all the way down to nothing, and it'll actually amplify room sounds so I can hear if I'm, like, in an airport and I need to hear if they're calling my flight. I can just turn them down really quickly. I love that. Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, it's really dope. And then the other side is volume, so I can adjust the volume of what I'm listening to. I love that feature. The other thing I really like is it's got a little touch sensitive thing on the side, so I can pause my music, I can skip a track, I can answer a call, I can do all that sort of thing. But the big thing for me was this pairing of multiple devices. Now, that was important because, as I said before, I have my Pixel 3 like sitting next to my keyboard while I'm working, and I'm listening to music on my PC. And what this allows me to do is I can pair to my phone, I can pair to my PC. So if somebody calls me on my phone and I'm listening to music on my PC, it'll switch to my phone. And I can answer the call. I can answer the call right there on my headphones. I don't have to pick up my phone. I don't have to do anything. I can just keep rocking. And then when I hang up the phone, my music will start back up again, which is really dope.
Yeah. That's
so awesome. The sound is pretty great. I mean, it's not like, I would say that I checked out the Bose and the Sonys, and I'd say the noise canceling on the Bose is probably the best. The Sonys probably sounded the best, and the Surface ones just had the features that I wanted, and I can live with the decent noise canceling and the decent audio quality. So
yeah,
I'm going to tell you, though, the crappy thing. Here's the thing that if you're thinking about buying these headphones, it might keep you from buying them. And that is that they are Cortana built in. And that was a huge turnoff for me because I'm an Android, you know, Google guy, so I like to have my Google there and stuff. So I was really like super like concerned that it wasn't going to work with Google Assistant, but the good news is it works with Google Assistant. Like their marketing department should have said, no, these are just, they work with any assistant, because that's just the truth. They'll summon whatever assistant you need. Like if you're on an iPhone, it'll summon Siri. If you're on an Android, it'll summon Google Assistant. So that was not to worry, but there's a big but here. when you connect them to your PC, it will automatically summon Cortana on your PC if you say the words. In fact, during this podcast, I must have said something close to it because it summoned it while we were doing this podcast, and I was like scrambling to like turn it off. So and unfortunately you can't turn that off on your PC. So if you're okay with once in a while accidentally summoning Cortana on your PC, which I'm surprised it didn't actually summon right there when I said it, then you'll be fine. But I still think it's one of my favorite pieces of gear because I love that multiple pairing and the look of them. I really dig. And they came with a really nice case, which, by the way, going back to the Hex Gears X1, that thing, that keyboard that I mentioned earlier, that came with a case, dude. It came with like a heavy-duty case. Like, you can like take it on the road with you if you want to.
That's good. Gotta love that.
Yeah, it's really dope. Anyway, so that is... I mean, we're running a little bit long. We probably have time. Do you have any more on your list that you want to like quick fire off?
Yeah, you know, just quick mention here. Like this is not my expertise by any means, but I think it's worth noting some of the drones that DJI has put out in the last like year or so. Specifically the Mavic 2, the smaller one. That thing is insane. And I did a project earlier in the year, and you know, my good friend who is a, you know, DP, he's got a red epic dragon, he's got all these drones, and he's like, no, dude, I'm gonna go shoot this with the new Mavic 2. And you know, that thing's like this tiny little drone. It's like the size of like a small loaf of bread. it's insane. And he, you know, we went and shot this construction site where they're getting ready to build the new I believe it's the Trade Center here in Denver. Yeah, so, you know, he flew this thing up there, and I was just like blown away at the footage quality. I'm looking here. The Mavic 2 Pro has like a 1-inch sensor, f/2.8 to f/11 aperture, 10-bit video. Like, it's crazy.
That's
so
crazy.
I think that's going to be an area to kind of keep an eye out. Like, you know, just to see where all that goes is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm so drone illiterate. I know almost nothing about them other than, you know, I know the names around them, but when I see the form factors shrink like that, I've seen some pretty big ones, but like I think I've seen the one that even you're talking about, and I'm like, that's pretty ridiculous how tiny they're getting and how compact and like how great the quality is still. They're just like making leaps and bounds in terms of like what these things can do as far as like their camera components.
Yeah, no, the camera stuff's getting, you know, miles better. It looks like they even have a zoom version now. I don't think it has the big sensor on it, but you know, you can just fly it around, do your aerial footage. It's crazy.
That's nuts. All right, I'll quick fire my last couple here. So getting back into like the PC hardware, the RTX 2080 Ti's that I got in this new PC build are pretty phenomenal cards.
Oh yeah, I can't believe we haven't talked about those yet. Yeah, big deal.
Yeah. So those the whole RTX line is I think that NVIDIA is trying really hard to kind of show the value on the gaming side, like, oh look, you ray traced graphics and stuff like that. And I'm not really sure where people's heads are at. It doesn't seem like that group is like super impressed with it. But no. I will tell you this. I think these cards are fantastic. I tested them against three 1080 Ti's in the Redshift benchmark scene. And the two 2080 Ti's were finishing that scene as fast as three 1080 Ti's. So you have to, that's a pretty significant improvement. And that's not even with Redshift. Redshift hasn't even taken advantage of any of the RTX technology yet.
Well, that's the crazy thing. Yeah. Like, the RTX stuff hasn't really been tapped. And when it is, like, people are going to, all of a sudden, they're going to get like another increase in performance out of nowhere when the software catches up.
Speaking of which, I've been really having a blast playing with Arnold GPU. I'm on the Arnold beta, and Arnold GPU has been taking advantage of the RTX stuff, I think, since, gosh, I want to say like from the beginning or close to the beginning, and it is pretty remarkable. I can't say a ton about it, but
yeah,
I would say that it's right now just using it on one card, using the GPU renderer for Arnold on one card, I'm seeing like, wow, this is going to be a game changer when this thing comes out, and when they support multiple cards, I think it's going to be like, okay, this is legit on par with the other GPU renderers out there in terms of speed.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's going to be bonkers. If they can really get the kind of one-to-one, you know, CPU rendering looks identical to GPU version, you know, that's going to be, I don't know, that's going to be tough to compete with. Especially, it sounds like SolidAngle or Autodesk are working really close with NVIDIA to get it, like, super optimized on their cards, which, that'll be sick.
I mean, even at CES, the CEO of NVIDIA, when he was doing his song and dance at the end, he mentioned Arnold and the relationship they have with Autodesk and developing for. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And yeah, I think that I think everybody's going to start. I think Octane's already working on implementing some of the stuff that's going on with the RTX cards as well as Redshift. And I think in the next year, this is actually a good segue to what we're excited about in 2019. And
for
I think one of the things that we're going to see in 2019 is going to be a lot of rendering technology taking advantage of these RTX cards. And really, I'm hoping that we're going to see even more performance increases with this technology being built around the RTX stuff. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I saw they announced two of the cheaper versions. I think you got the 270 and maybe even the 250. I don't know what's officially been announced, but it looks like there's the kind of more entry-level cards coming out or coming down the line.
Yeah, the 20s, I think he mentioned that either the 2060 or the 2070 was going to be like $350 or something like that.
Yeah, and that's insane. That'll be the interesting comparison, like with, you know, the 1080 Ti or maybe even just the regular 1080 versus this 2070 to really kind of see, you know, what you're getting for your money there.
It'd be pretty, that would be pretty interesting to see if like even the cheaper cards that don't have as much memory are still pretty fast. Like that's actually kind of cool. Depending on what you need, if you don't need all that memory overhead, if your scenes aren't huge, then maybe you could get away with that.
Definitely.
The Arnold GPU thing, them, you know, building for that platform and then being CPU, GPU, really, I think is something that a lot of people aren't really talking about, which is the ability to design and work on a GPU version of a renderer and then be able to send it to a CPU cloud to finish rendering is really a pretty powerful workflow if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's going to be the ultimate, you know, place for all these renderers to end up is, you know, I know V-Ray takes advantage right now of both CPU and GPU. I don't think it does it quite, you know, one-to-one. They don't share all the same features, but, you know, I know RenderMan, you know, the guys at Pixar have been kind of really working on getting their engine on both, you know. So yeah, man, it's exciting. It's exciting stuff. I think, it'll be insane once Arnold is running on the GPU.
So what gear, tech, whatever are you looking forward to in 2019 before we start to wrap up?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm working on a post about some monitor tech here.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot. Okay, let me set the tone for that. So you are what I would consider to be a display nerd. And you started this journey of like trying to find the right display, and I was blown away by your just like you just bought every display I think I could think of.
Yeah, I got a little carried
away.
So
tell us about this journey, dude. Like, I don't go too deep because I'm hoping we can make this into a blog post and share some of the findings that you've discovered. But give us the cliff notes. Like, don't mention any.
Yeah, absolutely. Particulars. Yeah, no. Like, yeah. Long story short, I've been using the same two monitors for quite some time, and you know, it kind of dawned on me. I was like, man, I know this monitor tech is getting pretty good. It's probably time to, you know, check out some new monitors. So I went down that rabbit hole, and it's ridiculous. Apart from, you know, shipping issues, you know, like monitors coming in the mail like completely like defective, like, which was kind of a surprise. I ended up buying 11 different displays, if I'm not mistaken. I got a lot of returns being processed at the moment, but yeah, so, you know, I was just kind of relentless trying to really figure out, like, again, like for me it's always kind of about a like price performance issue, like what can I spend on a great monitor where I'm not dropping like $6,000 on a, you know, an Ezo. I don't even know. I've never had one of those. But my previous monitor, my main monitor, was an NEC, like 14-bit, you know, LUT, 10-bit display. It was super high quality. But, you know, to get a bigger version of that monitor was, you know, still like $3,200. And it looks like that display, they kind of stopped manufacturing. So I'm just, you know, so it kind of sent me down this path of like really finding a sweet monitor. And I found a couple, and I'm stoked about them, and I'll kind of be putting all that together in this post. But the crazy thing,
for
of
that,
course,
look for that soon.
Yeah, well, the crazy thing though, I'm like watching some of the stuff at CES, and it's just like LG is dropping all these sick new monitors, and they're all, you know, everyone's like,
you're gonna have to start all over again, dude.
Yeah, but I'm like, I gotta be done with, you know, I think for what's available, like as of right now, I did pretty good, but you know, I saw it looks like LG is putting out some monster 49-inch wide display, which is like having two 27s side by side without the, you know, seamless, obviously. And I actually think that's a pretty nice setup, like, you know.
43-inch curved display, though. Think about that for a second. 43 inches.
Yeah, it's big.
Like,
it's crazy.
That's like, I can't, like, I would strain my neck if I had that monitor.
Well, I think, you know, like my setup before was two 27-inch displays, and that's just how the math works out. Like it's just that wide ass aspect ratio. But yeah, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Like I ended up getting a 20:21:9 aspect ratio wide screen display, and I kind of think that's a nice sweet spot.
Yeah, I can't wait to see your post. That'll be hopefully going up soon, so check our site for that. Also, it's at CES, while we wrap up here, there's a couple, while we're on the display thing, there's a couple more things from CES that I saw that looked interesting to me. One of them was this LG portable USB-C display. Have you seen that thing?
I saw a little snippet about that. That does look cool.
It looks like it sort of looks like a tablet. It's like a almost bezel-less flat display. It's got a single USB-C input, and that's it. It's powered through USB-C. There's no speakers. There's none of that. It's just a 27-inch 1920x1080 display that you can just like take with you anywhere. Like lean it up against a wall, put it on a stand, hand it to a client, like whatever.
Yeah. That's cool. And that's a whole like area of like, you know, display technology that I don't think is fully tapped. Like one of the things with this iPad that kind of pushed me to get it was the fact that I can connect it as a secondary display to my computer, which is cool. So to see more of that tech coming out is pretty dope.
And then the other display that I'm curious to see what you think of, since you're the display expert now, the Samsung at CES announced this like space-saving monitor. It's a 27-inch monitor, QHD, 32-inch model, I think they've got two, that is $400, and it has a like clamp arm that you you clamp it to the back of your desk, and it can basically go flat against the wall. Like if your desk is against the wall, it can like lean back flat against the wall, or you can like pull it forward towards you and like lean it and all that sort of thing. I thought it was a really interesting look. I think that in a lot, I'm intrigued by it because I'm sort of like a design nerd, and like I love the look of it. It's so minimal and sort of unintrusive. If you think about a monitor, it's a pretty big part of your desk, especially if you got this monster 43.4-inch Lenovo or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it was a Lenovo, not LG, as I said earlier. It's kind of cool, right? Have you seen this thing? It's like an arm.
Well, I saw that it, you know, allowed the display to go flat up against the wall, which my first impression with that was like, well, I probably want it a little closer to my face unless I have like a desk that's like only a foot and a half deep. But that does sound pretty rad. Like especially being able to easily manipulate the position of it, I think is really cool.
I think that's a smart thing, a smart way to take advantage of lots of people, I think, that have sort of not a ton of space in their office, or maybe not even a ton of space on their desk. I think that's a smart design choice. I don't know anything about the monitor, if it's any good or not. Probably decent. I mean, it's a Samsung, so it's probably a decent display.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's kind of another interesting thing, is it seems like Samsung and LG are definitely kind of crushing it in the display world, the TV world. So I know they manufacture half the panels for most of the other monitors that you're buying. That, you know, like a Dell monitor, I'm pretty certain has an LG panel in it. But yeah, man, cool. It's exciting times.
Well, I think that about wraps up our show. Thanks, Sean, for jumping on and going through all this gear.
Absolutely, man. You know, I can talk about this stuff all day long, so.
Did you hear that beep in the background?
I did hear a little bit of a jingle there.
That was my, I should have put this on there. I got the Nest smoke alarms my house. That, like, you know, they you know, test themselves every month or whatever it is. And holy crap, like, you've never, like, my dog is probably hiding under a bed right now because he gets so freaked out by the sound of smoke alarms that he's not a fan of these things. Anyway, anyway, thanks for coming on, dude, and sharing your findings. And anytime. I'm hoping everybody else out there, if there's anything that that you've liked, or any sort of gear or things that have worked their way into your everyday workflow, let us know in the comments. We always are looking for new things to try out or check out that make our lives easier. And be sure to check out our blog post that we have coming up about Sean's monitor journey. I guess you could call it a journey, right?
It was just a rabbit hole of craziness.
That's he came out on the other end, and I promise he has a selection that he thinks would be good for just about everybody in motion design, hopefully.
Indeed,
I mean, there's got to be a something to take away from that giant mound of returns you have going over there.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yeah, no, there's some exciting stuff. I want to find out if anyone out there is using any VR goggles as a display, or if they're, like, you know, rocking
there you go.
Cinema 4D in their VR headset. Cause that's
I've seen that. That's an interesting thing. If you are someone that has built a VR desk with, like, your monitor and, like, who knows, maybe it's the Grand Canyon in the background. I don't know how you like to rock, but let us know in the comments. We want to know what you're doing.
Indeed.
And thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out. And if you like the show, let us know. Maybe we'll do some more of these. But anyway, thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
See you all later.